Welcome to Tee Talk, where athletes share their stories. Join us as we explore the profound connections between sports, community, and the human experience.
We're here again with Larry Rout, Tulane All-American from Covington, Louisiana.
Yep.
So, Larry, we just want to come together as a Tee Club, talk about our experiences, and also how we transition from the playing field to real life. So just want to get started with your backstory. So tell me a little bit about your high school career.
Well, in high school, my junior year in high school playing football, I suffered a broken neck. Coming up, making a tackle on defense, and I end up having to be placed in a halo for 3 months and thought I would probably never play football again. But, you know, I was fortunate enough to come back my senior year.
So how did you kind of make that decision from, you know, having a broken neck to actually having the courage to go out on the field and play again?
Well, it was tough. You know, my mom didn't want me to play. My high school coaches didn't want me to play. But, you know, I was so much in love with the game, and I love competing, and I wanted to play again. So I told my mom that I would switch from defense to offense and play receiver. I told her I wouldn't put my head down again. And, you know, I worked really hard. You know, our team purchased this neck machine because we didn't have anything like that. So I worked it all summer. And you know, I played receiver my senior year with a neck roll. You know, I did a lot of things to try to take precautions to be able to come back. But, you know, the doctor, he told me he couldn't say I couldn't play again. He didn't recommend it, but he told me that it had healed completely. So, you know, I wanted to take that chance because I love the game so much. So, you know, my mom finally would sign the papers and let me go. My dad convinced her to do it, and I got a chance to play my senior year.
So what type of accolades did you receive that senior year?
Well, I made All-State, All-District, All-Metro, All-Parish. You know, I led the team in receptions, and we went to the state championship. We didn't win it, but we went to the state championship my senior year. So, you know, all that afforded me an opportunity to be able to play at Tulane.
So what was the recruiting process like, specifically with all the schools, and then how did you come around to Tulane?
Well, I tell you what, you know, because I was coming off a broken neck, I really didn't have a lot of schools pursuing me, especially early on. Tulane was the first school that really pursued me. And, you know, I developed a great relationship with Buddy Geis.
Who was the head coach then?
Vince Gibson was the head coach. And they were actually, you know, we already had two guys from Covington at Tulane at the time, Lester Lavallee and Curtis Bayham. And so they were familiar with Covington High, and they were recruiting my teammate, Richard Williams, also at the time. So they came to look at Richard, and they saw me play, and, you know, then Coach Geis offered me a scholarship. Tulane was the first school to offer me a scholarship. And then once that happened, other schools started coming on me late.
Okay.
And it was between Tulane and Arkansas. Lou Holtz was at Arkansas at the time, and there was a businessman that was from Covington who came to my high school and talked to my high school coach. He said he did business in Arkansas. So he got some film from my high school coach, brought it up to Arkansas. And the next week they contacted me. I went up there on an official visit. And so they offered me. But, you know, Tulane was on me first. And, you know, I wanted my mom to be able to see me play. So I decided to stay home and go to Tulane.
Great. So you came on campus. Was the stadium still there?
No, the stadium was gone. They still had the turf field, but the stadium was gone. I never saw Tulane, the old stadium.
Oh. So where were they playing when you got there?
In the Superdome.
In the Superdome. Yeah. So you mentioned a couple of people from Covington. Who were some of the people that you were excited to play against when you got to Tulane or play with?
Well, my former teammates, I was really excited with them. And I know, you know, at the time when I came in, Robert Griffin was the receiver because I was a receiver when I first got to Tulane. Okay. So, you know, Robert Griffin, you know, I'd watched him play. I knew he was a really good receiver. He was coming off an injury. And so I would look forward to playing with him as far as my former teammates that played with me at Covington High.
Gotcha. So you get on campus. What was the, like, daily work schedule? So, you know, did you come in on the summer or did you come in?
Yeah, I came in the summer. I came in early. I came, like, as soon as I graduated from high school in May, I was on campus working out, you know, trying to learn that massive playbook that we had. And so that I came up early that summer because I wanted to get out of Covington.
And who was one of the first players that you remember meeting or coaches?
Well, Buddy Geis was, you know, he was great at recruiting. I developed a great relationship with him. So I was looking forward to working with him to improve my game. And, you know, a lot of the players, you know, my homeboys, you know, I hung out with them a lot. And then, you know, I met some guys, LaRon Ambrose, who I had seen many times on the recruiting trail, because okay. we were at a lot of the same visits at the same time, and James Alexis, Kevin Tate, a lot of those guys that I had met during the recruiting process, so we all became good friends when we got here.
So, yeah, you're on campus. What was it like getting your schedule together and deciding what classes you were going to take? And
well, it was a process. You know, we came in and you know, try and decide what I really wanted to major in. You know, I initially thought, you know, I wanted to major in business. So, you know, I end up majoring in sports administration because I wanted to do something with sports when I finished college.
Okay. So you're on campus. You start going to practice. When did you realize you could be making an impact on the team?
Well, I tell you what, initially, you know, during the recruiting process, you know, they don't tell you about all these good players they have on the team. You know,
right,
you just see
right.
the star players and they're leaving and you figure you're going to come in and start immediately. But I tell you what, the first day I got to practice, I was like, I got to get in the weight room, you
right.
know, because trying to get off the line of scrimmage because I was playing receiver with these cornerbacks who were benching 300 pounds, and you know, it was tough. You know, I immediately knew when I got here that these guys were a lot better than me, and I need to get in the weight room, and I need to work hard and try to improve my game.
Okay. So did you redshirt your first year?
Yes, I was redshirted my first year.
All right, so how much weight did you put on leading into your...
I went from, I was 180 pounds in
what?
High school. By the time, you know, I redshirted that year, I was about 205.
Okay,
next,
good.
Next year.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I put on some weight in the weight room.
So your sophomore year, you played receiver?
My freshman year, my redshirt
freshman year,
I was
okay.
a receiver. And then my freshman year, I was a receiver. My redshirt freshman year, I started out as a receiver. We had Wally English was our coach then, so he called me into his office like early during camp. You know, he told me a story about this receiver who turned into a tight end when he was coaching at Pittsburgh when he had Dan Marino as his quarterback. And he told me a story about this guy. They moved him to H-back tight end from receiver and how he had caught the winning touchdown pass in the national championship game with Dan Marino. And you know, I didn't want to do it at first, but then when he kind of explained the vision of how he was going to use me, you know, I kind of opened up to it, and it turned out to be a good move for me.
Great. So your sophomore year is when you moved from receiver to
Well, really, my redshirt freshman
year. Your redshirt freshman year. Okay. So who were some of the defenders as you played in games that you came across that you remember?
I remember playing LSU. I think it was Jeffrey Dale who was guarding me at LSU. And I remember Southern Miss because a guy that I played against from Bogalusa was the safety that was trying to guard me. And I just remember telling him, because he was a year younger than me, that, you know, I remember in the game I told him it was going to be a long night for him because he was not going to be able to guard me.
So did you guys beat LSU any of the years you were here?
Yes, my freshman year, we beat them up in Baton Rouge when they were going to the Orange Bowl. That's the game where Reggie Reginelli ran back to punt at the end to win it.
So what was that atmosphere like?
It was unbelievable. It was unbelievable. They were throwing oranges at the team. You know, it was just an unbelievable.
Was that before or after y'all won the game?
They were throwing after we won the game. You know, they were upset, you know, because they were going to the Orange Bowl and they didn't want to lose to us. And that was the second year in a row, because when I was getting recruited on my official visit, Tulane beat them 48-7 in the Superdome.
Okay.
And so that was 2 years in a row that we had beaten them, and they were not very happy about it.
So how did that game go? I don't know. I wasn't there. How did that game go? How were the quarters? What was the atmosphere each quarter like?
It was great, because it was a back-and-forth game. You know, we would go in front. They'd go in front. You know, we had we scored some touchdowns late, and like I said,
who was your quarterback?
Mike McKay was the quarterback.
Okay.
Yeah, and it was a great atmosphere. It was a great win for Tulane, and you know, Vince Gipson, you know, he slayed the giant twice. So,
so when y'all went into the fourth quarter, were you guys winning?
It was. I think we were up. And then they scored, and then we scored again at the end to go up and
so how
and
much time
game.
Was on the clock when Reggie pulled
it
that off?
It must have been about, it was late. It was probably like 3 minutes or something like that left in the game when that happened, because they didn't score on the subsequent drive, so we ended up winning the game.
So the defense held, too.
Yes.
Okay. Excellent. So then you move into your junior year? We're in junior year now?
Yeah, was with my redshirt sophomore year.
So your redshirt sophomore year.
Mm-hmm.
Who was the coach then? Still Gibson?
It was Wally English at that point.
Okay, so how did things transition then? You going into your, because by this time you're putting the stats up, right?
Yeah. And really, my redshirt freshman year, you know, I led the team in receptions.
Okay.
My redshirt freshman year, and that's the year I made All-American.
Okay.
And then my redshirt sophomore year, I led the team in receptions again. And it was like my
so
freshman
you had
year.
Two different quarterbacks. You had a quarterback your redshirt freshman year and a different quarterback your
yeah
redshirt.
it was that was the year I had maybe three different quarterbacks.
Really?
My redshirt freshman year, we started out with Bubby Brister. I caught my first pass from Bubby Brister against Mississippi State. And then Wally English started playing his son.
Okay.
And so the second game of the season, we're playing at Ole Miss in the Superdome. And he had pulled Bubby out again and put in John English, and Bubby ended up leaving us.
Oh, wow.
And transferring. So John English was our quarterback, but we were going through some court cases at the time, so every week he had to get an injunction to play, you know.
Really?
Yes.
So what was that about? I don't know anything about that.
Well, apparently he had exhausted his eligibility.
Who?
John English.
John English. How old was he?
He might have been, I don't know, maybe 20, 21 or something like that. But I think He had exhausted his eligibility, but they were saying that he had some injuries or whatever, so he should have had, like, a medical red shirt. But the NCAA said no, so his dad took him to court. And so he would go to court during the week, get an injunction, play on Saturdays. And so that happened probably the first four games of the season.
Really?
Because we beat Florida State that year, and they were ranked in the top five. We beat them in the Superdome, but then we had to vacate all of those things later because the courts made a final decision about after the fourth game that no, he was not eligible to play.
So what is your understanding of what the eligibility rules were at that time?
Well, I think he had played.
It's a certain amount of semesters.
Yes, he had played a certain amount of semesters. They were trying to say he had a medical red shirt. We thought he was ineligible, you know, because we in the first game of the season, he didn't travel with us to Mississippi State, but he came up later and he ended up playing in that game. And everybody on the team was kind of shocked that that happened because we understood that he was ineligible to play.
So how did you, as a player, what did you think of the difference between him and Bubby Brister in terms of the eye test?
Oh, well, Bubby was a player. You know, and we had a really, really good team that year, too. And I think, if he had stayed, we would have done a lot better that year because it ended up, you know, after Bubby left after the second game, against Ole Miss, we beat Ole Miss in the Dome. Then, you know, the next week we beat Florida State. And we like I said, we had a loaded team. We had a loaded team that year, but we ended up, after Bubby left and then John was ineligible to play, we were to our third, fourth team quarterbacks. And, it was a struggle from that on. Then on the rest of the season to score because we had guys that probably wasn't ready to be on the field at that particular time.
So what were the consequences to John English playing? What were the consequences
at
the end of the season? What happened?
We had to vacate those, the win against Florida State. We had to vacate that. I think we beat Ole Miss, and we had to vacate those games. So they, all of those first four games were losses for us.
Did English continue that your following year?
No. After that, he never played again.
I mean the dad.
Well, yeah, he was one more year, and then I think he got fired after that.
Gotcha. So, how was your redshirt junior year?
Well, it was we got a new coach. Mac Brown came in.
Okay.
We struggled that year. We ended up going 1-10 because he was implementing his own system and bringing in some new players. Because Wally English had brought in a lot of junior college players to try to help us win early on. And so Mac went back to recruiting the high school players. So it took a while. You could see we were getting better and better as the years were going on.
Okay. And who was your quarterback your junior and senior year?
Terrence Jones was a quarterback at that point. And, when he came in, when Terrence came in, we had Ken Carter. I had Ken Carter, my redshirt sophomore year. And then Terrence came in, and he would play a little bit because they had him playing all over the place.
Right.
But then when they finally put him at quarterback, really started clicking.
Okay. And then you move into your senior year.
Mm-hmm.
What was that? What were some of the highlights from your senior year?
Well, my redshirt junior year, we went 1-10. My senior year, I saw a lot of injuries that year, too. I had some hamstring injuries. So my senior year, you could see the improvement of the team. I think that year, my senior year, I might have caught 29 passes or something like that.
Okay.
Mark Zeno was emerging at that time. Terrence was emerging. You could see the team gradually getting better. I just wish I had one more year because the next year they end up going to a bowl game.
Nice. Any bowl games while you were there?
No, none.
Not the first 2 years either?
Not the first 2 years either. And we had pretty good teams. We lost a lot of close games. I think we ended up my freshman year, I think we ended up 5-6 or something like that. And then We might end up riding with the same thing my sophomore year. So, and then my junior year, like I say, we went 1-10. We had a coaching change, and we may have ended up like either 4-6 or 5-6 my senior year that we were here.
Okay. So how was it, you know, as you matured, how was it going to classes and going to practice? What was that like for you? And, you know, just over the course of time, how was that process changing as you matured?
Oh, yeah, it changed a lot. You know, once I started getting around my junior and senior year, I'm like, I need to buckle down because I need to graduate. And I went to tutoring a lot, you know, taking probability and statistics. That was a hard class. And I remember going to class and going to tutoring, you know. And so I just, you know, I'm the first one of my family to graduate from college.
Great.
So I wanted to make sure that I had the ability to graduate. So, you know, I really took school seriously and did what I had to do to be able to graduate on time.
So what was the campus environment like during that time?
Well, it was different. You know, it didn't feel like, because we didn't have the stadium on campus, it felt a lot different, you know, I think, than what it feels like now when I come here to a game. Because,
right,
you know, Friday nights we were away from campus at the hotel, and then we'd go to the Superdome. But it did seem like game week or whatever when I was here on campus, like it does now.
So what was it like in your classes? So you majored in sports administration, and you went to classes. We know how Tulane can be sometimes. So what was it like for you inside the classrooms?
Well, I tell you what, the professors were tough. Mm-hmm. You know, I just remember, you know, our coaches used to tell us, you know, when we were going out of town to go play, you know, make sure you inform your professors that you know, you're going out of town. And professors would be like, Mr. Rout, I really don't care. Just make sure you turn my work. You know, so they were tough. You know, it was tough. You had to really buckle down and do what you needed to do to be able to graduate.
And how did the other students, how do you feel that other students received you?
Well, I really didn't have a lot of relationships with other people outside of people that were on the athletic teams. You know, I was real close with basketball players. You know, I was close with a lot of my teammates. I can't say that I really, you know, met a lot of friends outside of that.
Mm-hmm. So were you here during the basketball scandal?
Yes. Yes,
so
I was.
So what was your perspective of how that went?
Well, I didn't, you know, we heard rumors about all of this
leading
stuff.
Leading up to it or at that time?
No, like leading up to it. You heard all kinds of rumors going around. And I, you know, I knew Hot Rod. Hot Rod was like, you know, we were in Monroe Hall and he had the suite on the end right next to my room.
Okay.
So, you know, I knew him and you
what
know,
kind of person was Hot Rod?
Hot Rod was cool. You know, he was down with us, and he hung out with us, and he was cool. You know, he was a good guy. And I believe, and he, you know, he personally said to us that, you know, he felt like because he was the guy going to the pros that all of this stuff was kind of pushed towards him, you know.
Right.
And he was like, I didn't have anything to do with it. He was like, why would I do that? And I'm about to be a number one draft choice, you know.
Right.
So, and I believed him. I don't think he willingly participated in stuff like that, you know.
Good.
So I think, you know, I always had a great impression of him. I know he was a hell of a player.
So you went to some of the basketball games.
Oh, yes.
What was it like going to basketball games
great.
On campus?
It was great seeing Louisville come in here with the McCray brothers, and Hot Rod was just toasting them. I mean, he was unbelievable. And he would tell us, I'm getting 35 tonight, watch. And he would go out there and get it, too. You know, he was a hell of a player. And the atmosphere in there was great. We loved going to those games, seeing them play against Louisville and Memphis and all of those good teams that would come in here.
Yes, I feel like that was one of the main one of the main things we always kind of did, all the teams supported each other. Mm-hmm. So you guys were doing that at that time as
right,
well.
Right.
That's good. So as the stuff is leading up in basketball, you guys start hearing rumors. You know, what is administration? How's administration moving around? Athletics, how are they moving around?
Well, I really didn't hear a lot of them talking about, you know, what was going on. I know amongst the students, you know, people would say, you know, something's going on, you know, and then when it really blew up, you know, because we heard, like I said, we heard the rumors. Like, I would ask some of the basketball players, and they was like, no, I'm not getting any money. I don't know who is, but I'm not getting any money for doing anything illegal.
Right.
And like I said, I would always say, why would I, you know, take $1,000 and I'm about to be a millionaire?
Right.
You know, why would I do that? That makes no sense to him, you know. So I really didn't hear administration saying anything about it, not to us at least.
Okay. So that kind of happened, the basketball team. So how did you feel like when they determined that we're just going to shut basketball down? Oh, what was that like?
It was devastating. You know, we enjoyed going to those games when we were out of season. And, you know, at the end of our season, we enjoyed going to see basketball there. It was like during the spring, it was like, you know, it was dead because we were used to going to those games and we didn't have them anymore.
Okay. So, you know, you're leading into your senior year. When did you feel like you had a real good shot of making it to the NFL?
Well, my senior year, you know, I had talked to some agents. I had talked to some scouts. And, you know, they kind of like what I was doing, you know. So I expected to get drafted, but I didn't get drafted. I had got a letter saying that I may get an opportunity to play I think it was the blue-gray game then, but I didn't get an opportunity to do that. So, you know, I went undrafted. The Saints did call me the day after the draft and asked me to come out to David Drive and do a workout. So I went out there, and I thought I had a great workout, you know, because they even told me that afterwards. But then when they measured my height, they didn't like my height.
Oh, okay.
They measured me at like 6'3" And, you know, back then they had Hobie Brenner and John Tice, who were 6'7" and 6'8".
Wow.
And they were more like blocking tight ends, and I was more like a receiving tight end. So I was before my time.
Okay.
Yeah.
So then what happened after that?
Well, after that, you know, it was tough, you know, because I played football all my life, and I wanted to continue to play, you know, and I entertained. Because around that time there was the NFL strike and all of that stuff, and I even got a call to do it, but at that point, you know, I was like, I'm going to move on with my life. So, you know, I started working.
So when you say you started working, what was that?
Well, my first job I was working at a juvenile facility in Thibodaux.
Okay.
One of my high school teammates was working there, and he was like, you know, come out here, they'll hire you. So I went out there, I worked there for a little while, and, you know, really didn't, you know, Thibodaux was kind of like Covington. It was a small town,
right,
and I
right.
was used to New Orleans, so I stayed there for about a year. And then I moved back to New Orleans, and I ended up getting a job selling cars at at Brian Chevrolet. So
okay.
I did that for a couple of years, and you know, that kind of got old. So, you know, I had always said I never wanted to go into education.
Right.
But then I got an offer to work at an elementary school.
Okay.
And so I ended up going to work at Murray Henderson Elementary School in the West Bank. And while I was there, I was teaching special education and, you know, going back to school to get certified in special education. And the principal asked me to coach a basketball team at the school. And I started coaching, and, you know, I led that basketball team to, like, 3 championships.
Wow.
And then that coaching bug was on me. And so I did that. You know, I was there. I was at the elementary school probably for about 5 or 6 years. And I was coaching probably my 3rd championship against another coach who actually, he worked at Berman Middle School, but he was a coach at Edna Carr High School.
Okay.
So he talked to me. He was like, man, he was like, you know anything about football? I say, I played football. So he was like, man, we got an opening at Edna Carr. And I was like, really? He was like, I'm going to introduce you to our, he's like, I like what I see you doing out here on this basketball court. I'm going to introduce you to our head coach. So he introduced me to Don Watney over at Edna Carr. And I went in for an interview. He said he was looking for an offensive lineman coach. I had never done that before. So
right.
He was like, could you coach it? I was like, yeah, I can coach.
Of course.
So he ended up hiring me. I didn't know the first thing about coaching offensive lineman.
Right. So what did you do?
So what I did was I called Joe Philbin, who was my position coach at Tulane, who's the offense coordinator and offensive line coach at Harvard.
Okay.
So I called Joe. Joe was like, can you get up here? I was like, yeah. He was like, well, get on the plane and come up here. You're going to stay at my house.
Okay.
And so I flew up for a week. It was during their spring practice. I flew up for a week, and I went to practice with him every day. I was in every meeting with him, and he was like, any drill you see that you like, let me know. And he had a GA with him, and he said, look, whatever he tells you, you make a tape for him. So I came back home with about 10 VHS tapes,
okay.
And I studied them. And, you know, I went on to become a pretty decent offensive line coach at Edna Carr. I was selected to, they used to have, at the end of the year, they had a game, the Jefferson Parish versus Orleans Parish.
Right, right.
I was selected as the offensive line coach every year.
Okay.
I was there. So I just studied, and I went to every clinic. I knew I went to every clinic. If LSU had a clinic, Tulane had a clinic, I went, and I talked with the offensive line coach. I asked them for video, and everybody would give it to me. So I just studied and studied and studied until I knew what I was doing.
Who were some of the players that you coached at Edna Carr and during that Orleans Parish, Jefferson Parish game?
Oh, I coached a lot. In fact, Edna Carr's head coach right now, Bryce Brown,
okay.
was one of my offensive tackles. His compadre who played guard right next to him is Brock Hayes, who is a running back coach for Troy University right
okay.
now. I coached a lot of guys. Like all of those, the majority of Edna Carr's staff right now was there when I was coaching. So
wow.
I coached a bunch of those guys.
Excellent, excellent. So I love it how you said, you know, I didn't know how to do it, but I went and learned and I got with somebody that knew what they were doing and figured it out. That's kind of, you know, that type of messaging and networking is kind of what we're trying to do here with T Club, just develop those networks so people will know where they can reach out to. So were there any systems in place from Tulane for you to actually reach out when it was time for you to transition?
I don't think so back then. I know now, man, I look at the things that they're doing now for these kids. I wish we would have had those type of things back then. But I will say, because I had a degree from Tulane, that opened up a lot of doors for
okay.
me. You know, when people would read that on my resume, and they would give me a second interview, you know, so... But there was not something like they're doing now, because I know I just got something about how they're having this fair for businesses to try to help the kids now. So there was nothing like that when I came out.
Right.
So I'm pleased with what they're doing now with the athletes.
Good, good. So how often do you get a chance to go back on campus and you know, relate with the athletes or talk to them or anything like that?
Yeah, all the time. Every chance I get, I get to go. When one thing about Coach Fritz, he's very accommodating to ex-players. He want us around, so I've come to practice probably 3 or 4 times. I've got to speak with the players when I go to practice.
So what's that experience like?
Oh, it's great. I think of all the coaches that have been here after I left, Coach Fritz is the one that's really more open to us being around and hanging around and talking with players. Like I came during the spring. When they were having spring football practice, and you got to go in with your position group, and you got to talk to all of the kids in there, and then the coach, the position coach, introduced us and had us, talk to the kids about life and about football, about whatever we wanted to talk to them about. So I think that's really a great thing, getting the alumni back in here. So the kids can get to know them, and then, they can get some networking opportunities after they finish.
And how receptive are the kids as a whole to that type of stuff?
Oh, they're very receptive. Tulane has great kids. That's one thing, being around them, that I find that they're all great kids. They will talk to you. When I came in, when they had the little forgot what it was called, but it was in the spring when we came. We went to the Glazer suite, and we got to meet the team that night, and they had all the guys out there welcoming us as we came in, and they would come up to you, talk to you, and even the experience where we went, where Jim got honored that night,
right,
the kids
right.
sitting at the tables with us, and we got to talk to them and know them. I just remember Jaquan Jackson talking to Zeno about running routes and all of that stuff. So, I think they're very receptive to what the former athletes have to say.
Excellent. So, speaking of, now they have the NIL stuff, name and image, likeness. That type of stuff is going on. How do you, what was your first impression? Like, were you for it? Were you against it? How did you feel about that whole system being put in place?
I've always been for it. I just remember when I was here, we couldn't work.
Right.
The only time we could work was during the summer.
Right.
And you couldn't have a job. And I know, coming from my background, I didn't have a lot of money.
Correct.
I remember most of the times I was broke, and I didn't have, I didn't have money to go buy anything, because I wasn't the type that was going to ask my mom, because I know she didn't have a whole lot.
Right,
so
right,
I was
right.
going to just be on my own. So I think it's great. I think, for all of these years, I just remember head coaches having there's a shoe contract for a university, and head coaches getting paid $200,000, and we're out here wearing them, and they can sell our jerseys, and you don't get any money for that. So I'm all for it. I think that, I don't agree with major schools saying, you come here, I'll give you this,
Right.
But I think for your name, image, and likeness, if there's a jersey with your name on it,
you're marketing in that way.
You need to be able to get money for that. And, I hear people talk about it's ruining the game. I don't think so. I really don't think so, because the big schools back in the days were giving people money under the table all the time anyway.
Right.
I think it's even the playing field. That's why all of the big schools are crying about it right now, because they can monopolize all the great athletes.
Right.
Now athletes can go all over the country, and they can get compensated for their name, image, and likeness.
Right. So that, it's not like everybody is going to get anyway.
Right.
I mean, you have to have something about you that's marketable.
Right.
People need to want to wear your jersey.
Right. Right.
Or they want, you have to have that type of personality.
Yeah.
So the students here at Tulane, have you kind of noticed any things that are maybe we can do in terms of NIL that could potentially help out? How do you feel in terms of actually being a participant in that process?
Yeah, well, I think it's good. I know Mike Arada and Jimmy Arno, they're doing a good job. I think Tulane has a great model of how they do things with NIL. You know, I think they came up with that collective and you know, people can donate and the athletes, you know, and I think they try to give something to almost all of the athletes, not just the stars on the team, you know. So I think their model is working very well, you know, and I support it as much as I can. And I think that, you know, everybody should support it, because I think we got a great group of guys here. And I don't think guys at Tulane are here to get money. I think they understand that they're getting a great education. I think they understand that they're in a great culture and a great atmosphere. And I don't think they're here, you know, for how much money they can get. And I think Tulane does it the right way.
Okay, good. So, you know, we've been doing all of this stuff. We're having all these conversations down memory lane. What are some of the legendary moments that you remember being a part of?
I think one of the biggest ones was when we beat Florida State in the Superdome. You know, I can't remember the exact ranking, but I know they were in the top five.
Okay.
And they came in here while English was our coach then. And I just remember he put in this new formation that we had never ran before. He called it double wing. And I was playing H-back. And, you know, and he moved me around.
What was the score when y'all were getting ready to run this play?
We at the end of the game, the game, I don't know if we were, I think we were up. And it was 31, I think we won.
So y'all, 31-28. Y'all playing against a top five team and y'all are beating them.
Yes.
Going into the, we
probably had about 3 minutes left in the game.
Okay.
And so if they get the ball back,
they got a real good chance of beating us.
So all night I had been running this flat route. So, you know, we had a, you know, where I would go flat and then I would go up to sidelines, like a little rail route. So they called the play at the end of the game. And if we get the first down, we run out the clock and we win the game. So I went to the flat and then I took it down the sideline and I was wide open too. I mean, literally, I was probably about 10 yards behind the defense. And unfortunately, I had to wait on the ball like a punt, but I caught it, and I turned to run, and I got caught, you know, at about the 20, because we were on our own 20, I think.
Oh, wow.
And so it was like a 60-yard pass, and it ended up winning the game, and, you know, I got clowned because I got caught, you know, they were saying I was, you know, but
who threw the sharp ball?
John English. So I literally had to turn around and wait on it. You know, I can see the defender running at me, and I had to wait on the ball, and I caught it. And then as soon as I turned around, you know, he tackled me. So, but it was a great, great, great win. You know, and it was a back and forth game because I remember we went up 14-0 on them. We had a Curtis Bayham ran a punt back, and then they drove all the way down on us. And I can't think of his name, intercepted the ball and ran it back 99 yards for a touchdown. So we're up 14-0 in the first quarter, and everybody's like going crazy. But I just remember Coach said, hey, they're going to come back. And so they get the ball and they throw a beautiful post down the middle to Jesse Hester for like 80 yards, you know. So they came, it was back and forth, and we finally took that lead at the end. And thankfully, we were able to close it out and win the game. So that was a great, great memory.
Yeah. And what about some of the people that you played with?
Oh, yeah. I played with some great guys. Played with Mark Zeno, Terrence Jones, Elton Vills, you know, Mike Jones. Played with a lot of great players. Donnie Maggs, who played in the NFL, Burnell Dent, who played in the NFL for a lot of years, Lionel Washington, just a lot of great guys. And all these guys are still my friends to this day. You know, that's the great thing about coming here. I've gained friends that have been my friends ever since that day.
Yeah, so Tulane, I mean, you would think that they didn't really have a history of putting players in the NFL, but you just named four or five.
Right.
And off your head.
And there's more because Eric Thomas was on that team, too, that went to the NFL. We had from St. Aug, linebacker, can't think of
Lonnie.
Lonnie Marks, you know. Richard Harvey. Yeah. We had a bunch of guys on that team went to the NFL.
Okay. Good. Excellent.
Yeah. I don't know if you heard about this. I meant to post it, but Alabama just started an NIL program for former athletes.
I saw your post.
I didn't know if I did it or not.
Yeah, I saw that. I was like, oh, I wonder if Tulane's going to do that.
What do you think about that?
I think that would be great.
Yes.
That would be great, man. Because as former players, you think you go back and think about that. You know, I'm like, man, what if?
We've always thought about doing those legend jerseys,
right,
and that type of thing, and yeah, that money should go to the student athletes that.
Right.
People are still wearing their jerseys.
Right.
Yeah. The deal in Alabama is they allow the use of all of the Alabama logo and name and everything for former players. So you could use it. You could do a jersey deal or something like that.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Hey, Tulane, look at that. Let's do that.
Get it together. Anything? You have any questions about anything?
No, this was great reminiscing. Thank y'all for having me.
Dude, what would you like to see T-Club involved with or doing more of?
Well, I think just getting players together, maybe doing something maybe for homecoming or something where we get former players all to come back in and have a barbecue or something so everybody can catch up and reminisce. I definitely would be open for something like that.
So we're here with Larry Robb. We want to thank him for coming out and giving us some of his experiences here at Tulane, and hopefully the talk will impact some of the student-athletes we have now. And, of course, we wish you so well with your family and good health leading out to the future.
Thank you. It was good being here and good, like I said, good reminiscing on all these old good times.
All right, Larry. Thank you.
All right, thanks.